This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
England's highest quality title race of all time, but coming out on top again in the Premier League, Manchester City.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
We're off the ball. EPL is back on BFM. And with me, your host, Cam Ruslan, we have three of the finest football pundits that I could find last minute. One is Arvind Sidhu.
Hello, everyone.
Leeds is Arvind Sidhu. He's going to have some things to say a little later on. And Gogolin.
Hello, everyone. Last minute.
Yeah. No. You were top of the team sheet, always.
Oh!
And also equal top of the team sheet is always Des Corkhill.
Thank you very much. And VAR, surprise, surprise, might make an appearance this week. It is dreadful. It is an abomination.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night kind of screaming, VAR?
No, what really upsets me is that people are accepting it. People are saying, oh, it's okay, it's part of the game now. It's dreadful. It's like the five substitutes. It's just dreadful. Not all progress is good.
Okay, and if we have time, we're going to talk about the back pass rule as well, and substitutions. How about that one, Des? So we're going to start with, it's an unlikely start. I don't think too many times we would put the top of the show, the scoreline of Norwich 2, Everton 1. But at the end of that terrible display, really, against the worst team in the league, Rafa Benitez finally got sacked from Everton. And Des, I want to start with you because your family in Liverpool is part Liverpool, part Everton. I think your brother's an Everton fan. So, you know, clearly the divides can be crossed. But was Rafa Benitez to Everton, was that a relationship that was always doomed?
I think if you win 1 in 13, no matter what the relationship is, it's doomed. There is a problem. But I would say you said finally sacked. He had 7 months. He's the shortest ever manager at Everton. And the one thing that he was promised when he came in, and the one thing he asked when he came in, I remember vividly the press conference because there was a lot of ructions. Is he the right thing? He said, listen, this needs patience. 7 months is not patience, no matter how dreadful the defeat was, including a dreadful own goal by Michael Keane. Just awful. If your recognised best centre-back is scoring own goals like that, I don't know where you go from there. So I've got huge amounts of sympathy for Rafa Benitez because it seems to be that he is carrying the can. But now, Mashiri has now gone through six managers, two directors of football, and £500 million... and is no better off than he was before. So sometimes the man who carries the can maybe isn't the problem. There's a feel-good around Everton generally because of the new stadium. There always seems to be a feel-good around at the start of the season. Remember, they won the title three times last season under Carlo Ancelotti. Ancelotti left them in a big, big mire. So Benitez will carry the can. There's one or two injuries there. There's one or two young players who've come through. It's strange. Everything points to the fact that Everton should be so much better than they are. I don't really know whether it's just the Rafa Benitez who was the fault, but he's the one who carries the can. But you look at that, six managers, two directors of football, £500 million, and they're no better off than they were before. So something is wrong somewhere.
Gogolin, you've always been an advocate of giving time. You're saying that the project always takes time for a manager. Do you still stand by that? Do you think that he was hard done by after 7 months?
Yeah, of course, 7 months is a short term in football managers. I mean, we all know how long it takes. But like you said, it was doomed from the start. You know, Benitez going to Everton, the pressure was on him from day one, you know, especially with all the backroom dealings and all that. And like what Des is saying, there's something broken there, that the fact that he's gone through this many managers in this past. This is Everton we're talking about. They are relatively a mid-table club, but they're always good enough. You know, you can always bank on them to be there and do well. There's something, I don't know what the owner is trying to do, but there's something going on in the back for them to be fall off the radar as much as this, especially with a manager like Benitez.
Arvind, let's look forward then, and let's ask the question, who could be a possible replacement? There's talk of Martinez, who's been...
Biesla's going.
Arvind's feeling sick and crying. There's talk of Martinez from Belgium. There's talk of Duncan Ferguson, who had a successful, he's a club legend, had a successful interim, and Wayne Rooney, who is a club legend, who's kind of perhaps possibly going to pull off the impossible at Derby. Who do you think?
I'll put a name out there that I think is due a big job in time, but he's got serious, serious commitment to Brighton. Graham Potter, for me, would be the man that would be able to come in, fix things. The type of players that Everton have, the flair players that they have, they've got the Richarlisons, the Dominic Calvert-Lewins, the young boy, Anthony Gordon, is just such a good... He was the only bright spark in that game. Everyone else, Andre Gomez was sloppy, passing all over the place. Salomon Rondon, you would expect him to be out the door now that Rafa has gone, because Rafa was his only vouch. But Anthony Gordon was the bright spark in that Everton squad. But Rafa has done what he's done, right? I mean, a lot of Liverpool fans call him the agent Rafa. He sold Luca Dine to Steven Gerrard at Aston Villa. Luca Dine could play for any top six club, in my opinion. I think the summary of this was, if you watch that game, when Norwich went up 2-0, you could actually see Rafa looking down the floor and smiling, because he knew that his time was up and he knew that nothing is going to work from now on. But for me, all those names, not the Ole Gunnar Solskjaers, not the Wayne Rooney's, managers coming back for the second time, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Jose Mourinho worked for a short while with Chelsea. Roberto Martinez, not really. I want to see Graham Potter be given a chance at a big club. And with Farhad Moshiri's money, I think he could do well.
But the problem with the Graham Potter is that he would need time as well.
Yeah,
he took time at Brighton. And you've just seen Everton are not prepared to give time. They've given Rafa Benitez the shortest ever time. Whatever going on there. So time is not going to be allowed at Everton. And that is a problem. Whoever comes in, they're going to have to hit the ground running.
Well, OK. Well, speaking of which, our second match is the, again, an unlikely second match to talk about. But it's Aston Villa 2, Manchester United 2. I think that Villa... Steven Gerrard has hit the ground running, and he's brought in Philip Coutinho, who certainly hit the ground running, set up a goal and scored a goal. Gogolin, you're a Villa fan. What has Gerrard brought something to the club to make dream big?
Well, what he's tangibly brought to the club is the fact that he can lure players like Coutinho and Digne all around, you know. Because if we had Smith early on, I don't think the Coutinho transfer would have actually happened. So from a tangible point of view, yes, the Gerrard effect is there for him to lure players to Villa. From the first half, I thought we were in for a trashing, because the first 15, 20 minutes, we were all over the place, and United were, you know, as usual, they start really well and they were pressing and they got that lucky goal. And second half, we were getting back into the game. I think the team talk, Gerrard does, I think, very well team talk, because we always seem to be a different team when we come out in the second half. And I think we were first to the ball and all that. Sanson had a good game despite his poor pass for the second goal. And to come back from 2-0 down at Villa Park against United, I know United are not the United of before, but again, with that squad, it was a testament to what Stevie G is bringing to the table, and the fact that the players believe that they can do it. Before this, with 2-0 down, I don't think we would have come back. That is what I'm saying. It's testimony to the fact that Stevie G, what he's brought is belief that even at 2-0, we are still in it.
Des, I want to bring you in here to talk about United. I'm sure you want to talk about Stevie G. Do you call him Stevie G? Are you that kind of close to this?
Absolutely not. Of course not.
No? Okay. All right.
Of course not.
All right. So with United, Ranić, I kind of feel like that there is movement forward, but then... You have stories about Martial, very strange, saying that he didn't want to be on the team. I've never heard that before. I mean, what did you think of United, and do you think Ranić is getting the house in order?
I've heard players not wanting to play several. It's happened at Manchester United before with Carlos Tevez and others. And what you do is you get rid of players like that because they're bad for morale. Ranić he's got fabulous players to deal with, really good players. And to lose a 2-0 lead against a very strong Villa side. Steven Gerrard's results actually aren't as good as the performance suggests. So this might be an important one, because they've got something out of a game that it looked likely they were going to lose. But for Manchester United, A, they're still very dependent on David De Gea, who to my mind is still outstandingly the best goalkeeper, arguably, in the world. and has been. He had an off season, maybe a not quite De Gea standard season for the last couple of years. But he's an outstanding goalkeeper. In Varane, they've got a wonderful centre back. Maguire, when he's on form and not talking big, just playing, is terrific. They've got Ronaldo to lead the line. They've got some of the best kids in the world. It bemuses me. It did bemuse me under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who I still want to come back to the club, by the way. It bemuses me that they do not do better than they are, because the raw materials are just outstanding. The fact that they're giving up 2-goal leads to Aston Villa it befuddles the mind. They should be challenging the Chelseas and the Liverpools, maybe not the Manchester Cities, with the squad of player that they've got. Is Ranić getting it right?
They can't string two passes together, mate. The short pass. I was wondering what they were doing. They can't. There was no press, and they couldn't pass two passes together.
So this is the dilemma about them. They're a bunch of wonderful players, and so it's who can coordinate them to actually put two passes together. And Ranić is deciding to go through the strong arm tactics. I'm not sure that works at a club like Manchester United. I think you've got to stoke the ego of these players. No Ronaldo, Martinez suddenly does well. When Ronaldo's there, Martinez doesn't do well. There's no coincidence in that. So it's how you stoke the egos of these Man United players to get the best out of them. Ranić might be just too rough and raw and ready.
Well, yeah. It's January, something mid-January, and they're 24 points behind leaders. This is Man United, who was second last season, you know, so... I really don't know what. And by saying he's an interim manager, you've already shot yourself in the
Absolutely.
Foot because no player is going to be playing for an interim manager.
Correct.
Arvind, I'm going to hold you off here, because in a moment we're going to be talking about game of the weekend. When we come back to Off the Ball here on BFM 89.9.
Because whilst he's there, it's very difficult for other clubs to get near them. He's that good.
Off the Ball on BFM 89.9.
And we're back on Off the Ball with myself, Cam Ruslan, and Des Corkill, Gogolin, and Arvind. And now, Arvind, you're a Leeds fan, and I want to talk about Leeds. It was West Ham 2, Leeds United 3. That's a pretty boring scoreline for a Leeds United match. I mean, really, if it's not 4-5, what is it? But Bamford's still out, but this guy Harrison pops up with a hat-trick. You must be very pleased.
Very, very pleased. Jack Harrison, for me, has improved year on year under Marcelo Bielsa. And that's what he does. He improves players. He will do it with Dan James as well. First season with Leeds, next season we'll see the better Dan James. But this is a Leeds squad who has been literally ravaged with injuries. Literally. The entire spine is not there. There's no Bamford, there's no Calvin Phillips, there's no Liam Cooper. If you do the same thing to a Liverpool, you take out the Salah, you take out the Henderson, you take out the Virgil van Dijk, they're going to struggle. That's a top three team. A team like Leeds cannot afford having these kind of injuries. But they did. They had a 15-year-old on bench yesterday. Archie Gray, the great-nephew of Eddie Gray. 15 years old, on the bench. And Bielsa has given the most debuts in a season for any player. 8 players. So... he's really, really... And that's the thing with Bielsa. He will not spend. There's a lot of Leeds fans saying, oh, the squad is so thin. Let's go out. Let's buy players. He's just not that type of a guy, because he feels it's against his philosophy to go and spend money when he's developing players. So very, very proud of the boys last night. I thought they were fantastic. Best game of the season for us. Best performance. Back-to-back wins. And I think if you look at last week when they got knocked out by West Ham in the FA Cup, and you ask a Leeds fan, would you want 3 points in the league? The 3 points in the league is what they wanted. So overall... really good performance last night.
Yeah. But by the way, a lot of police sirens. Are the police coming for one of you boys?
It's probably the VAR police on Des. That's what it is.
Yes.
Can I mention VAR, please?
Oh, yeah. Please do, Des.
Okay. Technically, absolutely technically, Leeds' fourth goal was a click who belted it into the empty net, and it clipped a Leeds player on the line. Technically, VAR is so correct. So what has happened is the VAR and the new rules have taken any form of judgment, of reasonableness, of almost fair play out of referees' decisions. So Technically, he's offside. Technically, by the rules of the game, yes, that goal should have been disallowed. By all moral values, by every other value you would like to do, by sheer sportsmanship, that goal should have stood. But VAR comes in. Technically, everything is spot on. So the law must be obeyed. Otherwise, we will all go to hell and damnation. It is crap. Sport is meant to be enjoyed. Goals are there to be celebrated. And if you're taking goals off for technicalities, technically it was correct. I tell you what, it is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And we've not even mentioned Brighton versus Palace yet.
Yeah, well, we're going to be mentioning Brighton versus Palace in a moment. I'm wondering if you, though, can actually come up with a new angle for that one. And I like this moral policing. I think that's great, you know. Instead of the red or yellow card, perhaps Dez could pop up with a green card.
You're mocking me, Cam Roslin.
I know.
You're mocking me.
I'm on your side. I'm on your side. after that VAR talk, I'm a bit confused now where we're going. Oh, yes. I want to talk now about Liverpool 3, Brentford 0. And I'm not going to come to you, Des, on this one. I want to come to Gogolin as a neutral party to consider the performance. The scoreline sounds very emphatic, and it was emphatic. But at the same time, Brentford were able to break through, and a better finisher could have scored. This is not the lineup that Klopp ever imagined he was ever going to field. But he's engineered for it in mind. Gogolin, do you think that what does this say about Liverpool's chances moving forwards?
Well, beginning of the, I mean, show of the show, Des says that the league is done and dusted. I personally don't think so. I think Chelsea and Liverpool will still have a lot to say, and Liverpool, once their AFCON players come back, will have definitely a lot to say. I personally think City have not gone through their wobble yet, so yes, there is a lot to play for. So this Liverpool team that just played out against Brentford is, what you say, a testimony to the depth of squad that they have. That, yeah, I even though whatever Brentford did, I think relatively it was a Liverpool straightforward win. They weren't troubled much. It was from a neutral point of view, it was 3 points in the bag. I expected a bit more from Brentford, to be honest, especially with this Liverpool side, but they stuck to their game plan, Klopp's game plan, and even without the players, like, I mean, it's always, everybody's talking about the Salah and the Mane, you still have a really, really strong squad, and depth is what we need. So the top three teams right now in the Premier League have such good depth that you won't believe it. And I've always said depth is something that comes into play, especially in January, February, you know, when the injuries start piling up, the AFCON and all this, that when the variables come into play, is when depth comes into play. So I think Liverpool are still in with a shout, if you ask me.
You speak about wobbles as if it's a certainty that every club must have a wobble. But we'll...
It is. If I've been watching the Premier League, the Championship and everything, every team goes through a wobble, and that's a given. It's just how much you mitigate that wobble is what depth brings to it.
Okay. I'm going to bring... Now it's Dez's turn. And I'm gonna set him the challenge of talking about this match, but only limiting his VAR talk to 10 seconds. I thought this was a fabulous match, actually. I really enjoyed this one. This is Brighton 1, Crystal Palace 1. Crystal Palace, you're saying, is one of the most hard done by team together, was astonishing. And it made me think... Hodgson was the previous manager. The change from Hodgson football to this football at Palace now is astonishing. People talk about how managers can't possibly change something so fast, but they have been changed. But is it the inclusion of a single player, say, like Conor Gallagher, that makes the difference?
No, they play much higher up the pitch, and they've got faster defenders. Guehi, until he got injured, did he play at the weekend? But Guehi has pushed them further up the pitch. And so the two centre-backs largely have changed. So they're playing more in opposition half. They're taking the game to the opponent. Just a brief mention on VAR. The fact that it was your headline on a cracking game like that tells you the problem of VAR. It's given a dubious penalty. There is a penalty. There is contact. If the referee hasn't seen it, normally you get away with them. It's given up. It's a 50-50 disallowed goal against Jack Butland. That's a reasonable challenge, many centre forward by Mope in my book. But VAR interferes, and suddenly Brighton have a penalty, and they have a goal disallowed. And we're talking about that. That's 15 seconds. But Palace are just a different team. And Brighton are a very nice team as well under Graham Carr. They play progressive football. They like to try and go and win games of football. That's what Palace do now. They try to win games of football. Under Roy Hodgson, they tried to not lose games of football. Therein is the fundamental difference. And you see, give me a relegated team that tries to go and win games a million times out of a million.
Arvin, you were talking about the Brighton manager Potter just now. Did you see any? What is it that you like about him that you maybe saw in this match? But also, I just want to point out on my side, this was a proper. It's not actually a derby, but they have a rivalry.
Yeah.
They really meant this, and that was good to see.
Yeah, I think he has improved the entire squad quite significantly. Their goals average is much better than last season. Defensively, they're stronger than last season. I think they've got a smashing left back in Mark Cicciarella at the left back, ex-Barcelona and ex-Getafe player. He just whips great balls into the box. Yes, Neil Mopé, well, there'll always be that question of do they have a 20-goal striker, which they've not had for ages. So that's probably that one area that Graham Potter, if he gets that sorted, you would expect the amount of chances that they create, that they'll probably be higher up the pitch. Adam Lallana, for me, settling back to the old Adam Lallana pre-Liverpool, so he's doing well as well. Or Pascal Gross, what a terrible penalty that was. I thought it was absolutely horrible. I know a lot of credit goes to Jack Butland, and he did a save and all that, and he did a better save in the second half as well, but it was a horrible penalty. So for me, Graham Potter has significantly improved the squad, and he's done that because he's had a lot of money from the Ben White transfer, and he's invested it in buys that are making it work for that squad. So overall, good things for Brighton.
I grew up fairly close to Brighton. I still don't care about them at all. I don't know. I just fail to be excited by Brighton. But Potter, I suppose, for England, I've no idea. I'm gonna hold off from the big talk of what should be the big match. I'm gonna hold off from that. I'm going to take it over to the next part when we talk about the league decider, Manchester City against Chelsea, here on Off the Ball, BFM 89.9.
Captain, leader, legend.
Off the Ball on BFM 89.9.
And we're back on Off the Ball with myself, Cam Ruslan, Des Corkill, Gogolin, and Arvind. And now, the match that you would ordinarily think should be the lead match in our show, but I've put it all the way down here. The title decider, shall we say, Manchester City 1, Chelsea 0. I put it down here because I personally feel the league is done and dusted. I think Des felt that earlier, though Gogolin still think there's some life in it. Gogolin, I'm going to bring you in here. I thought that the one thing that I took from this was that the Manchester City press, and they looked like a team bursting with energy at the beginning of the season as opposed to halfway through. Testament to Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, of course. I mean, again, the depth they have is, you know, incredible. They're right, all these players, and they play the Pep way, right? This is ingrained into them, as you can watch. Regardless, the way that they have so much of time on the ball, the way that when they lose the ball, every player, when they lose the ball, they don't even... Even if it's like they think it's a foul, they don't argue much with the line. But they immediately, I saw Silva, he got fouled right in front of the lino. And he just had a shot of the lino and immediately turned around and went back to the ball. And that is what I was thinking. That has been ingrained into your training, because he just spent a second and then he realized that he needs to get back to defending. And he went back and defended at the corner flag of the opponent. And that's my point. These guys press. It's, I think they're born every day. They go into the training ground and it's press, press, press. So it's come secondary to them. What I really didn't expect is that Chelsea's game plan of just defending, and you know, parking the bus, I thought was Mourinho. It's all back, you know, Mourinho days again. And with Lukaku as the outlet, I understand what he was trying to do in playing Lukaku as the outlet against, you know, Stones and all that. But you really needed to get the ball to Lukaku. And, you know, it was just that it was eventually going to just come out.
Des, did you learn anything here that you didn't already learn? Perhaps about Chelsea, actually. It was an okay performance from Chelsea, but they just seemed just overwhelmed.
In many ways, this reminded me of the Champions League final last year when Chelsea didn't really come out to play. They kind of sat back and soaked up what Man City had and were able to go and take the win. But it doesn't work every time. Not when you've got somebody like Kevin De Bruyne who can come inside two players and finish like he did. The goal was absolutely glorious. Manchester City are just so dominant. I wish I shared Gog's optimism that they'll have a blip, but I don't see weaknesses in Man City. I think they've rotated players. This was probably their strongest team, and you look at it, but there's a world-class replacement for every single player in that squad. They're a sensational group of players. £1 billion helps. It really does. But you also put Guardiola in charge, and he's put a rugby mentality. Now, by rugby mentality, they're not arguing. They're stepping back. The total discipline. Liverpool are fairly similar as well. You don't argue. Just get on with things. Something goes against you. You have your word, your captain maybe says something, then you get back ready to go. You just take what's coming your way. It's great principles to have. It's also really good when you can afford a 100 million pound player like Jack Grealish to give him time to bed in. So he's not turned over anything, but he's still playing the big games. He's still making a contribution, and he's part of a team. He's not a 100 million superstar. He's not going to change Manchester City like Coutinho will hopefully change Villa. But he just fits into the team. They're a remarkable group of players. I just wish it hadn't cost £1 billion to put them together. Otherwise, I could really admire them. The one other thing, can I just... Jim Beglin might be in trouble because of commentary. he called it empty had and quickly corrected himself to Etihad, former Liverpool player doing that on air, former Leeds player as well doing that on air. Gosh, he might be in a bit of trouble. Might be in trouble, Jim Beglin.
Yes, on the WhatsApp group, Goglin was instantly up with that one.
Me and my son were laughing our heads off.
It is funny, but no humour allowed in the modern day. Can't joke about things like that. You might upset somebody.
Yeah. Well, Arvind, you were nodding your head in agreement with Des there, but do you think that there's a... I mean, Goglin said that they're going to definitely get a wobble, but do you think there's an opportunity, a possible chance, some chink in the armour?
No, I don't think so at all. I agree with Des that it's unfortunate that they've needed to spend the amount of money to do what they're doing. But if they win the title this season, it's 4 titles in 5 years. That's a dynasty right there, because you know how difficult it is to defend your title. And the thing with Pep Guardiola, he's done this with Barcelona, he does this with Bayern, and he's doing this with City. The moment he smells blood, he doesn't let go. We saw how it was like when Liverpool came to Etihad and a couple of seasons back, and Leroy Sané scored that goal. And when City went ahead by 1 point, he drove it in that team that we would win all our games. It's regardless what Liverpool does, they finished on 100 points, Liverpool finished on 99. So I really don't see a way back for Liverpool and Chelsea for me for this. I think Man City will wrap this up. They've got an opportunity to probably drop a couple of points here and there, and that might help them in the Champions League when it comes to what they really want. But for me, 4 titles in 5 years, it's almost unheard of in modern era when it comes to English football. So I think they deserve all the compliments of it.
Okay, well, that's Man City we've been talking about. And so we're going to go next to our next match is... The next Man City, the new Man City, in 5-10 years' time, we'll be talking not about Man City's achievements, but about Newcastle United's achievements on the big stage. But at the moment, they're struggling. Although new manager Eddie Howe has not suffered any defeats under his management at Newcastle, I think I'm correct with that stat. They struggled to, well, they didn't struggle, but they had a 1-1 draw against fellow relegation people in trouble, Watford. The newly richest club in the world, Goglin, they're having a very extended wobble.
That's a perennial wobble there. The newly richest club in the world. I really don't know where they're going to go with this, you know, because if they have this project, I'm sure it's going to be a project also because of the amount of money that's going to be spent. But, you know, if they get relegated, and that is a distinct possibility that they will get relegated because it's already January, what are they going to do with that project? Are players going to come? Because I saw this meme outside that if Steve Bruce had signed Chris Wood, what would be the fan base be saying, right?
I really don't know what are their targets. They haven't even laid that out. What are their plans? What are their 5-year plan? What are their 2-year plans? I don't think they even know, because they don't know whether they're going to be in the Premiership or the Championship. And if they're in the Championship, what are they going to do? How are they going to attract the players? Regardless how much money you spend, our players are not going to look like mercenaries by going to Newcastle, right? Kylian Mbappe, regardless how much you pay him, he's not going to go and play the Championship, because everybody knows why you're going there.
I don't know. He could be a club legend if he did that. When I heard about Anthony Martial refusing to be on the team sheet for United, I thought, well, he should go to Newcastle. He's the kind of guy who could actually create a legend for himself there.
Well, no, because his attitude's all wrong. I think the Chris Wood signing is a terrific signing, because the objective number one for Eddie Howe is to stay in the division, stay in the top flight. And what Wood does is he gives them gives Newcastle a focal point, a centre forward for Sam Maximan and Ryan Fraser to play off. And already you've seen he's gone to a 4-3-3 with John Joe Shelby at the base of the three, and that's allowed Longstaff and Joe Wilton, who's redesigned himself as a left-sided midfielder. So I can see what the objective number one, get ourselves into positions where we're giving Sam Maximum more opportunity to get on the ball to score the kind of brilliant goal that he scored. Maybe the next thing they need to do is get in a centre-half who won't panic, because Newcastle very much did seem to worry in the last 10 minutes that Watford would come and get the equaliser, and Watford did get the equaliser. But the fact he's got a couple of big draws against Manchester United. Now, this is an important draw. They didn't lose. That's number one. They're still in with a fighting chance. There's still half a season to go. And you could see, I thought, what he was trying to do short term. It's not the long term plan. Chris Wood is not the answer. Chris Wood is not the answer to 10 years down the line. But Chris Wood is the answer to the next 6 months, or Chris Wood is one of the answers to the next 6 months. So I can see what Eddie Howe's doing. But Goggs is quite right. If Steve Bruce had signed Chris Wood, he would have been hung up on the... Well, what's the Angel of the North statue? He would have been hung up there and sold out to dry. So it's all about image, and Brucey didn't have the correct image. But Eddie Howe is a bright new thing. I think Newcastle will be fine now. I'd worry about other teams being dragged in. Newcastle will score enough points to get away.
Arvind, you have experience as a Leeds United fan of a great club, greater really than Newcastle United, that fell on hard times and has managed to claw its way back. We don't know, of course, if this is a permanent, if Leeds' tenure is permanent in the Premiership. But would you be able to offer, from your perspective, any ideas for how Newcastle can move forward?
It's quite different. I mean, the scenarios that Leeds had and Newcastle, where Leeds were in financial ruin at the time that they got relegated, they had to get rid of all their assets because they had to keep the club afloat. Newcastle's got a lot of money. And with the signings that they've made with Kieran Trippier and Chris Wood, I'm pretty sure in their mind, they've thought to themselves, are these the type of signings that will get us out of the Championship? And quite frankly, they are, because I can imagine Chris Wood scoring a bag of goals in the Championship, Kieran Trippier giving enough assists along with Ryan Fraser, players that know the know-how of the Championship. A couple of them are in Newcastle's books right now as well. And the one thing that Newcastle has done really well with this transfer of Chris Wood is, while he might not score as many goals for Newcastle,
Burnley,
they've taken away the goals from Burnley. So when you've taken away the goals from Burnley, that makes Burnley even tougher to stay up. And the thing is, these two games were going to define Newcastle. I agree with Des that they couldn't afford to lose. Having that draw is very unfortunate because of the manner that Watford scored in the last minute. But now they play Burnley this coming weekend. And if they get a couple of points, if they get 3 points against Burnley, Burnley are going to think to themselves, we've lost our number nine, we've lost to Newcastle, we are bottom of the table. It's very tough for Burnley to come out from there. So there's a huge game coming up for Newcastle. But I think it's different scenarios for Newcastle and Leeds. If Newcastle go down, they will steamroll the Championship and come back right up, in my opinion.
Yeah. We're now going to move on to, and I'm going to give this to Gogolin. I'm sure he'll be very happy. The glamour tie of the weekend, which was Wolves 3, Southampton 0. I'm very excited about this match. Yeah. No, but I'm wondering, well, Southampton, who are they? What are they? They just put 4 past Brentford, and then they get beat. What's... I just don't understand them. What are... Gogolin, can you explain to me what Southampton are?
If I was a betting man, I'd probably be losing so much money on Southampton and Brentford. This is the same Brentford that beats Villa, then goes get trashed by Southampton, and then rolls over at Liverpool. So, you know, Southampton... again, I really don't know what they are. What are they playing? They started out the season well. They have a really good manager, and the four goals that they put past the other day, Brentford, was a long time coming for Southampton. If you are a Southampton fan, because I know a Southampton fan, and he said they also have like a project, but they keep selling their best players. So again,
that is the project, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. They asked him, "Well, is that the project?" And you know, they keep trying to build players, and then every time they do really well, and their best players get picked. Villa were in that position a couple of seasons ago, and I really understand that it's just two steps up and then four steps down.
Well, speaking of project of selling players, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Des, you must love this kind of business proposition. It just must make your heart glow.
Absolutely not. I'm not a fan of Wolves because everyone's been waxing lyrical about Bruno Lage, and I think they've been one of the most negative, destructive teams in the league this year. That it's Wolverhampton Wanderers nil generally, and for them to score three suggests that Southampton did something pretty dreadful defensively. There are one or two nice Wolves players. They've got the Portuguese connection. How legitimate it is, I don't have any legal background, so I'm not prepared to go down and make accusations, but it does seem a little bit suspect how all of these players turn up there. Nonetheless, they're in the top eight. Wolves are feeling pretty happy with themselves. I'm glad that they've stopped just sitting back and defending, because they just sat back and defended for so long. Picked up the odd point here, were unlucky there, but they weren't scoring goals. So for me, for the amount of money they get from television, the 150 million plus, team should be entertaining. I've been saying this for 10 years plus, and Wolves haven't been entertaining. This time they entertained. Poor old Southampton on the wrong side. Southampton, four games good, four games bad, four games good, four games bad. They'll be bottom half of the Premiership, but they'll be fine.
I'm so pleased that I gave the Wolves bit to Des, because they're eighth, Des. They're eighth. They're happy. And they don't allow themselves to be thrashed 10-0 every week.
The agents are always happy. Agents are very happy at Wolves.
Okay.
Somebody's making money there.
Okay, in a moment we're going to come back and we're going to look forward to the upcoming matches in the EPL here on Off the Ball on BFM 89.9.
Where's the try? And he's always prepared to give it a go.
Off the Ball on BFM 89.9.
And we're back, Off the Ball. It's EPL looking forwards on BFM. Some midweek matches coming up, along with... there are so many COVID hit matches which are pending, and I'm not quite sure how they can sort that out. But in this week coming up, Arvin, I want to give you the glamour tie. I think it could be a very interesting match. Leicester versus Spurs. And I'm wondering, is Conte actually going to field a real team for this match?
I think he will. I think Conte is at a point where he has come out and he's made some noises about the squad. He's made some noises already. And we knew he was not going to take Conte long, because that's how it's always been with Juventus. He did it with Roman Abramovich. If he could do it with Roman Abramovich, why wouldn't he do it with Daniel Levy? So he's always been a man who is not satisfied with what he has. He will develop players to a certain extent, but he still spends a heck of a lot of money. So he started making those noises already. So I still think he'll feel a real enough team, because it's got that competitive edge to always win. That's, you can never take that away from Conte. But he will still come out even after a win and say, you know, we still need reinforcements. We could see against the Carabao Cup one, he said when they lost to Chelsea, they were kind of outclassed by Chelsea in both legs. And he did say, we are a couple of steps behind where Chelsea is, because we need to invest. And that's what he's looking for Daniel Levy to do. Daniel Levy is obviously not going to do it in January, but he's kind of playing a little power game to get the money that he wants in the summer. So I still think that he'll probably brush aside Leicester on this one. Leicester, for me, this season have not been at the level that we thought they would be. So I still think Conte, with his winning mentality, will kind of get the points that they need for this one.
Gogolin, can I bring you in here and ask you, you know, with Benitez being sacked by Everton, Everton's one of the more patient clubs actually with their managers, whereas Spurs are less patient, but Conte has an incredible track record in terms of being given time. He'll be given time, wouldn't he? And how much time do you think he'll need?
He'll definitely be given time, but if he goes against Daniel Levy, then it's that's not much time. He won't be given much time. If he starts pressuring Levy to start spending, and when he doesn't want to, a lot of managers have found out the hard way that, you know, there's only one boss in Spurs. So it depends on how his relationship with Daniel Levy actually goes. You know, Conte is a serial winner, so he needs a lot of time, especially with a club like Spurs. You know, he really needs to rebuild and need to bring in his own players, need to have his own squads in. And I think a lot of players, bar Son and Kane, are not on his radar, so if you ask me. So he's going to be a massive rebuild. A lot of Spurs fans know it, and a lot of Spurs, I mean, you could have seen the past few games, you know, they've just written off the season. And this is coming from Spurs fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, they're not famous for being patient people. Dez, I want to throw a bit of a curveball at you here, because Kane is, I mean, he's famously a slow starter, but it's kind of, well, halfway through, it's time to start. Is he that terrible 5-season flash in the pan? and we're building up now to the summer transfer window, and I'm wondering how much he's thinking about whether he should stay or not. But I want to throw another name in, which we didn't talk about earlier. West Ham's Jarrod Bowen as a striker, somebody who could rival Kane in the England setup if Kane doesn't get his act together. How do you see the Kane thing happening?
I think Harry Kane may well have missed his big chance for the big move. I think it was either Manchester City to improve things, or you stay to be a club legend. And unless a Barcelona decide that they've somehow found another 50 million that they're allowed to spend illegally, unless that comes in, I can't see Harry Kane moving, particularly if Conte's there. I suspect Conte is trying to get the best out of Harry Kane. And if Conte can stay on good terms with Daniel Levy for 2 seasons, Tottenham can improve quite dramatically. Jarrod Bowen, so Liverpool have been sniffing around Jarrod Bowen for about 2 years. There's talk of him as being a very useful squad member, not the lead man. Not the main man, as we saw with his last second miss against Leeds at the weekend. he misses some chances. He gets in good positions, though, but he's been mentioned as a very, very useful player to supplement a front three. But he did well against Norwich, got the goals. Big chance going, but he's getting in the right place. I don't see he's a top player, but he's a very decent player, Jarrod Bowen, would supplement any squad. Perfect for West Ham at the moment, because he's scoring goals and he's adding value to what they do. But as for the Harry Kane, I think is likely to be a Tottenham legend now. It's kind of Steven Gerrard-esque, because he's missed his big move. Remember when Gerrard missed his move to Chelsea after the Champions League win? And then he said, hey, I may as well become a legend here rather than make millions and millions and millions more of the millions that are made. And Harry Kane, I think, will be in the same boat.
I don't know. You, Harry Kane, Newcastle United, teaming up with Kylian Mbappe.
And Chris Wood.
And Chris Wood. That's the dream lineup. Arvin, I want to ask another match, which I think versus Manchester United. I feel like, you know, Manchester United have a lot of troubles in terms of the psychology of the dressing room. And Brentford are the kind of team who I personally didn't expect too much at the beginning of the season, but they've shown themselves to be a very muscular team. They really get at you. And I wonder if this is precisely the kind of team this rather flaky Manchester United would not want to play right now.
Spot on, Kem. I think United would be dreading going over to Brentford, because Brentford right now are leaking in goals. They're not playing as well as they did at the start of the season. To be honest, they've been slipping down the table significantly. But the last thing that Man United want is to go to a place like Brentford. And when you've got that Scandinavian strength that they have, the Pontus Janssens, the Christopher Ayers, the Christian Norgaard, those are guys that will get in your face. And if the likes of Juan Bissaka, if the likes of Ronaldo, if the likes of Bruno Fernandes are not up for it, Brentford can spring a surprise. The only one, the one player that for me, since Ralf Rangnick has come on board, that has really taken on the Rangnick instructions and has probably been the best player at United since Ralf Rangnick has signed, is Scott McTominay. Because for me, Scott McTominay does a shift every game. He's not the most flashiest, he's not the most talented, but he's a reliable Scott McTominay. So for me, United, yes, they've got more skillful players. If they play their best, they will come away with 3 points. But if they're not up for it, and physically they don't feel like it, Brentford can bully them off the park on that one.
Yeah, you called it, and I agree with you entirely. Gogland, one last match that I want to talk about, and I don't even know why to talk about it because, you know, Chelsea could, against Brighton, put themselves tantalizing touching distance to the Premier League Cup, a mere 9 points away from the top. I just wonder what Chelsea's season is now, and what kind of motivation have they got in the league as opposed to in any Champions League campaign?
Well, they still, I mean, Tuchel would have hammered it into them that, you know, the blip that was the City game is gone. Now they've got to pick up points where they really need to. They will go on board, pick up points. They will give City a run for their money. This is what Tuchel does. Chelsea are too good to drop off the radar like that. And they will prioritize Champions League, of course. But, you know, the league is not a loss for them. They know that. They will be there hunting. They will be there within shooting distance, touching distance. And games like Brighton, yes, Brighton are a strong side. Well, every Premiership side right now is a strong side. But City, Chelsea should be back to winning ways on this one.
Okay, that sounds very self-assured. I see where you're coming from, but you never can tell. Wobbles. I'm going to jump away from the other two matches. Burnley Watford. Well, that's okay. Fair enough.
I'm sure Des got a lot to say about that one.
up the Watfords, and I want to move on to some transfer talk. It's still obviously transfer window time, and I want to throw out some of the perhaps crazier ones that have come up. One is Diego Costa. Remember him, to Arsenal. And another one is, same kind of thing in line, which is Christian Eriksen to Spurs. Des, and one last one I'm going to throw at you. This one is more likely Vlahovic, Serbian striker, to either Arsenal, Spurs, or Real Madrid. Any of these transfers, do you think there's any truth in any of these?
Vlahovic has been highly touted for a couple of seasons now, plays for Fiorentina, tall, a striker, good left foot, leads the line well, mobile, has got international pedigree, has performed well for Fiorentina, is a very good a team member, but who leads his particular part of the team as well. I think all smart clubs are looking at somebody like Vlahovic as an option to strengthen them. I think, so you mentioned Diego Costa and Mikel Arteta. Arteta's just got rid of Aubameyang for coming late home from seeing his sick mother. Diego Costa will give him a lot more trouble than that. So I don't think Costa to Arsenal has got a chance. I think Vlahovic, who's very much a 21st century player, mobile, good team man, looks after himself, no real bad publicity surrounding him. I think him coming to the Premier League, particularly to an Arteta-led Arsenal, that's probably the one that I would be putting most store upon. Don't forget, Arsenal have got the League Cup semi-final against Liverpool this week as well, Cam. Can't let that one go. And Arsenal called off the big derby against Tottenham at the week. And it wasn't only COVID. They said that they had players missing through AFCON. That really got my goat because I thought AFCON was off limits. COVID, absolutely. But AFCON was given as one of the reasons. I found that very, very strange. Completely off Vlahovic, but I found that one very strange.
Yeah, no, that is wrong. You're not allowed to say that kind of thing. Okay, Arvin, I'm going to finish with you. Des mentioned the League Cup, but I'm not going to. So we're going to move. I want to ask one last question, which caught my eye. Transfers, Haaland, possibly about 300 million, they're saying, £300 million to Real Madrid. And you're a Real Madrid fan. Is this possible?
It is possible because the amount of savings that Florentino Perez has made the last couple of summers, the books in Real Madrid show much better than what Barcelona does. But the very interesting thing with Haaland is that everyone knows there's a release clause at the end of the season where he's 75, 80 million, which is literally peanuts for a player like him. He came out over the weekend after they had won 5-1 against Freiburg and said, the club is pressuring me now to make a decision. So that, for me, seemed really awkward that Borussia Dortmund would do this in January when they know they're going to lose him at the end of the summer. So it seems that Haaland needs to make a decision. That 300 million includes not just his transfer fee. It's the commissions for Mino Raiola. It's the six-year deal. It's the weekly salary. But Real have got their sights on Mbappe. But from all accounts and what I've read, they can afford Haaland as well. I think it's a luxury that they don't need, but trust Florentino Perez to go with the bang with the new refurbished Santiago Bernabeu.
Okay, well, I think that the Haaland-Chris Woods combination at Newcastle, I think, could be very exciting. I'm looking forward to that one in the Championship next season. So, well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of Off the Ball. And I just want to thank our guest pundits, Des Corkill.
As always, crazily chaotic Cam Raslan, loving your style.
Gogolin, thank you for coming in last minute, first name on the team sheet.
Hey, always a pleasure.
And Arvin, thank you. We lost you there a couple of... You've been swapping between computers and everything, but such a pro. He got it through to the end.
Yeah, got it through. Just keep watching the highlights of Jack Harrison's hat-trick. That's the best play of the weekend, guys.
Okay. Well, thank you all, guys, and thank you for listening. Please join us on Friday for On The Ball here on BFM 89.9.
Build a mentality in that dressing room that's powerful, strong, made them feel like they're unbeatable. What a coach.
Off The Ball on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.